Hey everybody, welcome to our show. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you guys listening. Tyler here and
Ray.
Yeah, she wanted to say her own name, so you gotta let her. You gotta give her a little bit every now and then, or she'll beat me. So, Ray, what are we gonna talk about today?
We're gonna talk about body position, like fundamentals. Okay. What's going on in the MOA world? Range improvements. Some of the matches that we have coming up. And my new rifle I got.
I was surprised you left your new rifle at the end of that list, because I know you're super excited about it.
Well, it's like eating dinner. You always finish with dessert.
You know, just hearing you say that, it's like eating dinner. Well, I got to shoot your rifle, and I feel like it's not eating dinner. It's being force-fed, like, you know, a nasty mush of spinach that you don't want. And you, like, you get the spoon jammed in your mouth, and it breaks some teeth off.
It's more like waterboarding is what it was.
It could be. I mean, I've never been kicked by a horse, but I imagine that's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the fundamental side of it. We had something different we were going to discuss for this episode, and I see some videos out there, so I felt like we had to go back to the fundamentals and discuss the prone position. And really, every podcast, I want to break down a different fundamental and what you're trying to achieve and really what the purpose is. So I've seen some videos. I know you've seen some videos, Ray, because you're much more active on the YouTube and stuff like that than I am. But it's not that the videos are bad. It's, hey, you know, you need to have your body straight in line with the rifle, or your shoulders should be perpendicular, forming a perpendicular line to the line of the rifle. These are all great things, but then you start wondering, and like, why is nobody talking about why do you need to do these things? And there's some answers out there like, oh, well, you don't want the rifle or the reticle to jump off target after you shoot, which is true, but what are the effects if it does happen? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, it's all fine and dandy that you're laying behind the rifle and you got this perfect position and your hips are behind the rifle, your shoulders are perpendicular, and you look like a poster child for precision rifle shooting. And you shoot, right? And the reticle stays on target. But what if it doesn't? Like, is it bad? What are the effects? Like, I really feel like we need to dive into why we do all of this stuff so people start to understand why it's so important. And when it comes down to body position, right, if you think about recoil, when does recoil happen? And you know, we talk about this in the class all the time. We get mixed answers. What do you think?
Right when that firing pin hits that primer.
That's right. So when the firing pin strikes the primer, that powder starts to ignite and burn, turn into a gas, and it's forcing that projectile down the barrel. And at the same time, you're getting an equal and opposite reaction. And there's actually a formula out there. Ray, you're smarter than me, so you might even know this formula stored somewhere in that big brain of yours, where you can calculate the force of a recoil based off the size and speed of the projectile or some craziness. Well, you're smiling at me right now. Like, I feel like you already know the answer.
You're talking about Newton's law.
Okay, so going back to that, right? While the bullet is traveling down the barrel, there is also recoil. So any tiny movement at the muzzle is causing that barrel to aim at a different spot downrange. So building these positions, having that good body alignment, having those shoulders perpendicular, right? It's not because this is why, or this is, you know, we say to do it. It's because it has a purpose, right? And we're talking about consistency, being consistent for every single shot. You want the first shot equal to the last shot, right?
Yes, sir.
So, again, that recoil has to be managed, and it has to be the same every single time. So if you look at a position where your hips are off to the left of the line of the rifle, and then you shoot, and then the rifle hops to the right, right? That barrel is hopping before that bullet ever leaves the muzzle. Now, it is such a small amount that you might not notice it at your position, right? But if you're getting groups that are 3/4, 1 MOA, 1.5 MOA, and you're trying to figure out, well, is it me? Is it the rifle? Is it the ammo? Right? It very well could be you if your position is not that great, all right, because a small amount of movement at the muzzle will make a drastic change at the target. So the other thing is in the positioning, having the buttstock in the right position. It's not just about being in line with the rifle, right? So we talk about, okay, having our hips in line, having our shoulders perpendicular, and then got the buttstock in the shoulder, right? You want, if you think about the buttstock just two-dimensionally right now, right, and looking at it from the rear, it call it a rectangle for ease here, a long, skinny rectangle.
Got it. Okay,
looking from the back.
Visualizing,
all right? Now, if you only apply pressure to the left side of that buttstock, the left corner of that rectangle, right? Well, the force of the recoil is coming towards you, and recoil is energy. So as that energy is transferring through that stock and there's only pressure on the left side, what happens to...
Path of least resistance.
Okay, so that rifle is going to jump to the right. And it's the same opposite effect if you have only pressure on the right. Now you see that the rifle jumps left. Okay? So having that even contact on the buttstock so that it can only recoil straight back is critical to this consistency we're talking about. And then you see this all the time. I see it all the time. You see it all the time. I've been guilty before, right? But we're all different shapes. All of us. Men and women, right? Men could be round, they could be fat, they could be skinny, and we all have these different body shapes. And that's going to dictate how high our bipod should be. But for the longest time, everybody's been told what, Ray?
Lowest.
Get as low as you can to the ground, right? And then you look at the women's side. Well, women have anatomy that men don't. Well, some men might, but... So, the bipod height should be set for the individual person. And the whole reason is you don't want to go down to the rifle. You want to bring the rifle up to you. So, again, now we're working on that other dimension of the buttstock, the vertical. You know, we talked about the horizontal, too much pressure left and right. Now, it's that vertical. We want our shoulder square in the middle of that buttstock pad. And if we got the buttstock sitting too low in the shoulder, well then, Ray, I'm sure you already know this answer, but path of least resistance, right?
Yes, sir.
So if there's only pressure on the top portion of the buttstock, that pad, then as soon as we fire, we get that muzzle jump, right? And it's the same thing downrange, we will see shots go high because we're allowing that rifle to move a drastic amount while we're firing because our position sucks.
Well, when I observe students, new students, yep. I often, more often than not, see them have the buttstock too low.
All the time. Shoulder. Mm-hmm. All the time. So, and we demonstrate this in the class, and we talk about it in the classroom, on the firing line, and I'm always preaching it, right? Who's the boss, you or the rifle? And clearly you are. You are the mechanism that makes this thing shoot, aim, and do all of that stuff. So when you're getting into position, specifically talking about the prone, you will crawl into the rifle, and using your non-firing hand, you will reach under the buttstock, grabbing that buttstock and lifting it up to your head. And then shoulder forward. Press your body forward. Get your buttstock settled high in that shoulder, right on that collarbone. You don't want to have to tilt your head to the side to see through the scope. So you kind of want it a little bit closer to the neckline, kind of right underneath the ear, and you set your cheek. Now, for some of you, you might have to adjust your cheek piece because you've not been shooting this way. That's okay. Make the adjustments. Don't fight the rifle. And then place your hand on the pistol grip. Now, to change your elevation, to bring that buttstock lower to the ground and start getting your rear bag underneath, all you have to do is widen your elbows. But you've set the buttstock in the position that it needs. There's too many times we see a rifle just sitting there, rear bag underneath the buttstock, and a shooter just dives on top of it, cranks their head over to the side, looks through the scope, and fires off a round. Well, I can tell you that the way your rifle reacted during that recoil was not the same as your previous shot because you lacked the consistency. And God bless it, it fucking pisses me off so bad. I can't help it.
Well, you can't get mad. I mean, You were new at one point, too.
Oh, I'm not mad at the shooters. I just, man, I'm chasing that perfection, you know? I don't get mad at you. You shoot way better than me.
We all know that.
That's a lie. Everybody out there listening, that is a lie.
Well, I do shoot better groups than you, and I do reload better than you, for sure.
Well, there's a purpose for that, and for everybody listening, I am kind of the person who hates laying in the prone and just shooting groups. So I tend to rush, and if I get a half a moy group, I call it good, and I'm off to do something more important with my life. Which, you know, is not always the right thing, because I should slow down and just, you know, every once in a while take myself back to those basics. And, you know, you have way more patience than me.
Well, I'm a woman, and we usually do.
Oh, my gosh. Here we go. So the third thing, you know, we talk about vertical pressure on the stock. We talk about horizontal pressure. And, you know, having your body aligned and setting the stock in your shoulder properly. Now, let's talk about loading the bipods. And don't get me wrong. I used to be a big fan of loading the bipods because you have more control, right? And loading those bipods is going to tighten the connection between the rifle and the shooter and eliminate some of that movement in the rifle during recoil. But then I started to analyze and kind of look at, like, okay, well, if my groups change depending on how much pressure I push into the rifle, or if I don't have a lot of pressure, if my body alignment's off, my groups change, my zero changes because the rifle is reacting differently. So with that being said, loading the bipods, can I repeat that process? Like, say, for instance, Ray, I don't know, the PRS barricade, you know, the drill where you shoot
yes.
eight shots from four different positions at one target, right? Mm-hmm. So shooting from that barricade, is it possible to get the same type of force pushing into the rifle as you did when you loaded those bipods, you know? And
no,
some of these people are like, I'm trying to break these Harris bipods. They're like, holy crap.
But, I mean, if you think about it, like, yeah, if you're in dirt, you can dig into the dirt, you know, if you got the spikes or you got something to press up against. But what if you're on a slick, like, concrete?
Exactly.
You can't load into anything.
So loading the bipods is not a repeatable process, is kind of what I'm getting at. You know, so I'm not a huge fan of loading those bipods anymore. I'll put a little pressure forward, kind of the exact same amount that I would if I was going to be on a barricade or something like that. But I'm no longer trying to bust my bipods off. So there is other things that you can do to try and mitigate and keep control of the rifle. One is with your support hand, right? When you're using that rear bag, don't just use the support hand, your non-firing hand, to squeeze the bag, but also get a finger and a thumb contacting the stock and kind of pinch the bag and the stock together, right? Because what happens when you fire is that buttstock wants to sink into that little sandbag that you're using. So by having half a grip on the bag and then half a grip on the stock, you're controlling both aspects instead of just letting one try and do all the work. And with your 338, I mean, I wasn't able to load the bipods, and I really wanted to have a good contact between me and the rifle. There's no shark's tooth on the bottom of that buttstock, so nothing to pull it into me. So using the pistol grip, I got a slight rear pull on the grip, not affecting my trigger press or anything, but just enough to give me a little better contact with that buttstock. So these are small things you can do to maintain control of the rifle. And control is very important, as well as body position. So I hope you guys got something out of that. And we'll have some really good information for you on the next episode about another fundamental, all right? But when we talk about fundamentals, I mean, we live, eat, and breathe these things. And I can't stress enough, bone support, muscle relaxation, and natural point of aim, all right? Those are the three pillars that you have to build your foundation on. So anyways, next topic, Ray. I want to discuss tripods. And you made a comment somewhere the other day talking about, like, oh, this tripod is like cheating.
Yeah. Yes, tripods have gone a long way.
They have. They have come a super long way. So, man, when, you know, I went through Scout Sniper, Urban Sniper class, 10, 11, some, a while back, all right? And before that, we were shooting off tripods in our sniper teams, and we didn't have direct attachments to the tripods, you know, Picatinny rails, Arca rails, and Hog Saddle wasn't around, and Gun Jaw from Botash Tactical wasn't around. It was, we had to fabricate our own crap. So we're using aluminum Manfrotto tripods, and we would take, you know, take a PVC pipe, cut it in half, put a little bit of isomat, yoga mat padding on the bottom for your rifle, and that was your rest. Like, that's what we shot from. And then we were, oh my gosh, we were geeking out because they released, Manfrotto released a carbon fiber tripod. We're like, oh my God, did you see that hotness? So, and then tripods have extremely just blown through the roof in terms of capability. And you and me, we run the Crux Ord 42 millimeter tripod. Right?
Yes.
We've got the leveling base in there, and it adjusts from underneath, and we directly connect into an Arca system. And this thing is gold.
It's cheating.
It's big time cheating.
Oh, yes. I mean, I ran what the Vortex Skyline for a few years, and then after that, I ran the Manfrotto carbon fiber, and then a couple other tripods. And then once I got the Crux, I originally wanted the smaller diameter Crux,
yep,
but they didn't have any in stock. So I got the 42 millimeter and I was like, oh, this is a little bit big. I really don't want to carry this around, but I did run it and I love it. It is so stable that it's one of, like, I always weigh the pros and cons, and the pros definitely outweigh the cons with this tripod.
Yeah, and you see it everywhere. And the whole reason we're talking about this is to discuss the differences of the tripods and the techniques used to shoot from them. You could, on a Crux Ord tripod, you could throw your rifle up there, aim it at the target, lock that baby in, step away, press the trigger, and you're going to hit. I mean, it's that solid. It doesn't need your help. It just needs somebody to press the trigger. And really right stuff. They're a competitor of Crux Ord, and a lot of shooters use that. Tim Milkovich is one. He posted on one of his social media pages a picture of him doing that exact same thing. Setting his rifle up, aimed at the target, he steps away, presses the trigger, boom, impact, 400 yards.
I mean,
the tripod is doing a lot of the work for you.
Yeah, like my 1 mile first round.
1 mile first round shot with your 6 millimeter rifle.
Yeah.
I mean,
on the Crux standing.
Now, what you need to realize is that there's shooters out there, they got good Instagram followings, they're smart shooters, they know what they're talking about, and they're also using these tripods. And it can be misleading, right? First off, the tripods are not cheap, right? Are they worth the money? I think they are.
Yes.
You think so?
Yes.
Okay.
But we do this a lot.
We do. They will run you $1,500, right? Now, on the other side of that, if you can't afford that, not all is lost. We still, the cops that we train them on slick D700 aluminum tripods, and we use the Botash gun jaw on top. And is it as stable as a $1,500 tripod? No, it's not. It's not anywhere close. But it within their budget. It costs about $200 for that whole setup. If you wanted to throw another $100 in there, you could get a little leveling base for it so you can angle the clamp that you secure your rifle in, right? And there it is. I mean, $300, boom, you're set. That's it, right? And there's other tripods out there that are very similar to that. And what it really comes down to is both tripods will allow you to be successful, but one allows you to cheat the fundamentals, right? So you can get away with
murder,
doing shit the wrong way with the good tripod. Whereas the tripod that doesn't cost that much, it's, you know, it's dependable, it's sturdy, but it's not as stable. You have to really lock and hone those fundamentals in, right?
It's very similar to shooting a 308 and then going down to a really small 6mm.
Oh my gosh, you must have been reading my mind. I was just thinking about, you know, heavy recoiling rifles versus no recoil rifles. And the amount of bad positioning and lack of fundamentals you can get away with because there's no recoil. Right?
Yep.
So it's the same thing with these tripods. So there's a sling technique, and we still teach it. It was developed, over 10 years ago. And as Marines, we were using it. We didn't have fancy slings at the time, like our Max Ordnance sling. It's a byproduct of the old Ares Armor Husky sling. And what it does is, you know, it connects to your rifle just like a normal sling, but it has a sliding portion, and it has a Mariner's quick detach clip that can hook to your belt. And what you're doing with this thing is you're going to set your rifle into your tripod, aiming at your target, right? Now you're still going to keep these fundamentals. Shoulders are square, all right? Now you're going to do different things with your hands, arm, and your legs, you know, to get that natural bone support, not be squatting and in some type of weird air squat fashion. You know, your arm shouldn't be bent. You're trying to keep the left and right shoulder both rigid. So your left arm has to be contacting the tripod, getting that elbow locked out. Now the sling comes into play. Once you're aimed in on target, right, you're going to notice that you have a wobble zone, right? And it'll be going not only left and right, but up and down. So let me tell you, when we're talking about these two directions of movement, up, down, left, and right, all right, we are trying to eliminate or reduce the amount of movement. So the first method is to use the sling, especially from a tripod that it doesn't cost $1,500, that doesn't allow you to cheat. So you will tighten this sling, and what it's going to do is going to pull the muzzle down, and it's going to pull your hips in. Now we have reduced or completely eliminated vertical movement. So when you breathe in, you are so locked into this rifle. When you breathe in, you look at the target and your reticle will go down. And when you exhale, your reticle will come up. When you're trying to get your natural point of aim on a vertical level using the sling and the tripod, when you get to that exhale point where you're going to fire, that reticle should not be capable of going above the center of your target. If it can, then you need to tighten your sling. Remember, because we're trying to reduce or completely eliminate all this vertical movement. And then comes the left and right. The left and right movement is all natural point of aim. It's your body alignment to the rifle, to the target, and if it's off, then you're forcing the rifle to aim at the target instead of it naturally occurring. So the rifle wants to go right, you want it to go left, and you just keep wobbling, and your wobble zone is ridiculous, and you get upset and pissed off and furious because you're like, this shit sucks. No, your natural point of aim sucks, right?
Yeah. Okay, I have a question.
Go ahead.
So you're slunging and, you know, you're doing everything right, but you're in one position. What if you have to change positions? Do you think that will slow you down?
That's an awesome question. So, it's not going to slow me down. The sling should never be run through the legs of the tripod. All right. I know it makes sense and it seems logical. Run the sling from the fore end of the stock through the legs to your belt. That way it's a straight line, straight pull, but it ties you to the tripod. And that's where you get slowed down, right? You want to be able to loosen your gun jaw or your hog saddle and break out of that tripod. You're still connected to the sling, to your belt, but as you're moving, you pull that quick detach, that little string on our slings, and you're off the sling now. You're completely free to move and get into a new position.
So that's our sling that we have, but a lot of other competitors don't have that option.
Yeah, some competitors use like a carabiner or something like that. And unless you're getting off of the tripod and dropping to the prone, you can still get into all the other positions without needing to disconnect. You would just need to loosen the sling. But you know what? In honesty, there are some positions out there. Take, for instance, using the tripod as a rear rest. Some people will be like, there's no way I can do this with a rear tripod rest because I would be too slow. Well, are you too slow because it's not possible, or are you too slow because you don't practice that way? So if you practice getting out of the sling and detaching, then there shouldn't be an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say I'd be more concerned with making sure I get the hits from the tripod doing the right methods than worrying about how fast I'm going.
So do you prefer the sling in method or throwing a bag on top of the tripod?
It really depends. Most of the time, I'd much rather prefer to attach to the tripod directly and use the sling method. Much better recoil management, especially with the heavier calibers. Much better control with that left and right and up and down wobble zone. Okay, and ultimately, that's the way I train. So I'm extremely efficient and fast at doing that. So, yeah. I mean, what about you?
I use the Crux tripod and I get away with murder.
Okay.
And I know it. When I'm shooting, I know. I'm like, oh, this is such a bad position. And you know what? I've been doing a lot more with that Crux in weird positions. Been doing that weird thing called free recoil.
Oh my gosh. Let's not even talk about free recoil.
But I have a teeny tiny bullet.
I'm going to be like a millennial and get triggered here in a minute if you say that one more time.
I don't really do that anywhere else, but I remember on that tree stage where I was in this like awkward position where my head was like to the side, and yeah, it just wasn't a good position.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anyways, apply the fundamentals to these tripods, regardless of what tripod you're using, right? I'm just talking about implementing the sling technique for the lower value tripods. You know, the tripods that don't offer the same stability as the ones that cost the same amount as you would buy your child's car. So there's other slings out there too. Kopfjäger Industries, they make, what is it? I don't want to get it all wrong. I think it's called the kill foot.
I don't know.
It's a sling that runs off of the front of the stock, and it's actually a loop, a really big loop at the end of it, and you put your foot through it and step on the ground, and then you can pull and tighten that sling, and it works the same method as ours. It's just a different way, right? It's a way of doing it, and it's a good sling. Sandman uses it.
I feel I would trip over that thing.
Everything has got its place, right? Don't try it till you, or don't knock it till you try it.
Yeah.
So, anyways, good pieces of gear. Want to get that out there about the tripods. You know, not everybody's got the money to spend on it. So just know that fundamentals will get you through it, and you can get the same results from those cheaper tripods. You just have to work harder.
And also carry more weight.
Sometimes.
Well, I mean, sometimes some of the tripods are more expensive because they're all carbon fiber, fancy stuff. And what does that do? You know, reduces weight.
Very true. Very true. Well, we'll have another episode all about tripods, the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, how to set your tripod up, thinking about efficiency, movements, adjusting the tripod, you know, how it should be set up for these different positions. I mean, that'll take a whole episode by itself. I mean, we built a whole class around it, so.
And a new thing I've started doing, cleaning the tripod.
Well, that's because you're a dirty girl.
I am. Well, I use my gear, and it gets used and abused.
That's true. Who cleaned your tripod?
You did.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
I was busy.
All right. Well, that's enough on the tripods for now. Feel free at any time you guys have a question and you want to further go into details, hit us up on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Max Ordnance, or Nine Dolls, Tyler Hughes SS. All three accounts are monitored, and happy to continue to discuss these in detail. So now, moving on, we're talking about what's going on in the MOA world, Max Ordnance world, Disneyland Adventure Park area.
Well, we got that mover.
We do have the mover. So I wanted to discuss range improvements because, I mean, we've just been doing so much out there, right? So just run us through the cabin first. I want you to give your best description of the lodging and where everybody gets to stay. You come to our place and you get to stay with us, and we build camaraderie over a two-day period, and the learning is just phenomenal.
Okay, let's talk about what I thought it was before I came there.
Go ahead.
So I didn't know who Max Ornette was. My gunsmith knew this company, so I went ahead and I signed up for a course. Well, I drove down there thinking, talking to one of the people at Max Ornette, oh, there's, you know, a cabin out there, but I pictured it as a shack. I wasn't sure if there was running water or even hot water or electricity. But once I got there, I was very pleasantly surprised. There is running water and hot water if somebody turns on the propane, that is.
I am always on top of the propane.
It's a really big cabin. It's three levels.
You know what? I think I'm just going to stop calling it a cabin because everybody has this picture in their mind of like a little garden shed.
That's what
I'm just going to start calling it the mansion.
I don't know about that. Okay. The lodge.
The lodge?
A lodge would be more fitting for that place.
I like mansion better, but we'll go with lodge. Continue. Tell them. Three stories of greatness.
Three stories. So the basement is where we hold the classes, and there's a couple rooms down there, and that's for staff. And then we have the main floor, which there's a kitchen, and it has a commercial kitchen. With, you know, there's a pool table, there's two rooms down there. The small room I usually save for women who come or couples. And then when you go upstairs, that's where like the main bunkhouse is. There's another bathroom and shower up there, and there's like around 10 beds.
Yeah, so we can comfortably sleep 16 to 18 students at a time. And is like Ray said, pool table, lots of fun things to do after hours, TV. We now have Wi-Fi and cable, right?
Oh, I hate cable.
For the longest time, we did not have those things. And, you know, nobody complained, but, you know, things progress and we get better.
It was nice to be disconnected.
Yeah.
What is really neat about that cabin is it's completely off the grid, as in we are not using any of the city's electricity nor water.
Yeah, no water, no electricity. Everything is self-contained, self-provided, really. And, you know, it's just a great place. Mm. So, wraparound patio. Not so much in the summer, sometimes in the summer, but most of the, you know, winter and fall classes, students enjoy sitting outside eating their lunch on the patio.
And then in wintertime, I start a fire.
Yeah, yep. So, what did you call it? The lodge?
The lodge.
I mean, the lodge is the spot, right? And I feel like having that enhances the learning experience because we all stay there. We all stay together. We get to chat after we shoot all day, you know, and there may be some sad faces because they didn't get results on day one that they were hoping. But then day two comes around and it's like, you know, the power of the lodge just jumped inside of them, and you know, everything started to click. So,
but it's also nice to like talk to other shooters, out with them, crack open a beer, barbecue.
That's why we call it the MOA family. You come to one of our courses and you have become part of our family because we share a bond. So, outside of the lodge, we have so many ranges and different workings that we've been doing. We try to count the steel, and we're sitting at somewhere around 178 different targets spread out through the property. So we're situated in a box canyon, and we have a long-range firing line. And on this long-range firing line, we have a car to shoot from, a two-story building, a rooftop, a ladder, a rope, a tire stack. I mean, you name it, we have tried to set up as many different experiences for supported shooting that we possibly could. And then we have the prone area. And down the canyon, you have targets every 100 yards. It'll be at a minimum a 3, 2, and 1 MOA target from 200 yards out to 1,000. And then we have 1,100, 1,200, 1,340, 1,530, and then the 1 mile target. It's actually not 1 mile. It's a little bit farther than that. But I had to carry it out there, and that is pretty much where I landed. And I said, this is where it's going.
This is where it lives.
Yes. So, without angle correction, the target sits at 1,830 yards. And we'll be putting in a 2,000-yarder here pretty soon to quench Ray's thirst for the extreme long distance.
We need to put it further, too, right?
I think I'm just going to move you further.
I want 124.
124?
24.
Oh, 2,400. Yeah. I'll see what I can do.
Do you have a flasher for it?
Yes, of course. So all the targets past 1,000 yards got magneto speed target indicator, hit indicators on them. So when you hit it, it flashes. And, you know, it's a pretty cool feeling to see some of these far out there targets light up when you get your hit. So, and that's just our known distance range. We also have the unknown distance, which is kind of going up a gentle mountain slope, and targets are out to 800, depending on which firing line you use for that side. All the targets are 12 inches. Now, you're probably thinking like, oh, 300 yards, 12-inch target, that thing's freaking huge. How many people have missed those 12-inch targets at 300 yards?
A lot.
Yeah, because the wind out at our facility is no joke, man. You want to come out there, you want to get good at wind calling, you come out and you see us, unless you're Regina, and then we have to, like, pray for the wind to come because, for whatever reason, it was not cooperating that day. We got the East Canyon. That's a cool little range.
Yep.
It goes up this canyon. It's about 400 yards long, and I put targets everywhere, 50 yards, 25 yards. You walk around the bend in the road that I dug, and there's a target there. But then there's also targets out to 500, 600, 700 yards, depending on where you at in the canyon. And every 50, 75 yards, I place a different obstacle. So you'll have to shoot from, behind, you know, through some type of position and build your position around that. And it also makes it a little more challenging because the targets are mostly uphill. And as you know, having never shot uphill before and then going to that uphill shooting position, how much different was that for you?
It's awkward.
It was at first, right? Yeah. But then you got used to it because you got more experience with it. So we got the East Canyon, and then, you know, we've had our high angle positions. Well, high angle 1 and 2, and we're working on a third one right now for a while. So those are not new. New targets are set up for them, but the positions themselves have not changed. And then the windmill. We have a windmill on the property, and we have this range called the windmill pad. And we have put so much work into this thing in the past, I'd say 30 days, from a moving target that can be engaged from 50 yards, 100 yards, 80 yards, 200 yards, 250, and then 550. So, I mean, this thing is so much fun. And we put poles in the ground, put lights on top. We've illuminated this entire pad so that we can run nighttime shooting on it. And we put up a firing line, a Connex box. I mean, we have built this thing to be our diamond in the rough. And I'm excited for it. So that's pretty much our facility right there. I mean, we've got a bunch of other things going on. I don't want to be the one to talk about it. I want you to kind of give the rundown of the cabin course. Go ahead.
So there's 10 positions, and it is around the cabin, which is the lodge, we call it now.
The lodge course.
The lodge. And it goes out to, it's not that far. 350 is the farthest.
Position 10, stage 10, is the only stage that has a target at 350. Everything else is 250 or closer.
Yeah. But it's really awkward because it's like extreme angles upwards, and we're not used to shooting upwards, so it's difficult.
you know, leave me out of your conversation here. I'm used to shooting in every position. I could shoot upside down if I wanted to, but I don't.
Okay.
It does offer a different feel, the lodge course, the cabin course does. But these 10 different positions have you shooting in all different kinds of directions and
different winds,
and you're thinking like, well, how hard could it be to shoot 200-yard target? Yeah, come out and find out. Nobody has cleaned it to date, including myself. I've gotten really, really close, but I have still dropped 2 shots. So what the way we've been running it is, we've got 1 large target at every position and 1 small target. So you get 2 shots per position. You're given the distance. All you have to do is make your own wind call and build the best position that you can. Shoot 1 round at the big target, 1 round at the small target, and you get 2 points if you hit both, or you might not get 2 points. But it is challenging, and it definitely makes you realize that, hey, at 200 yards, I still have to make a wind call. Yep. So that's a fun little course. I know our law enforcement guys love it. The urban precision guys running those gas guns, they had a blast shooting it. So we're just going to continue to grow that course and kind of add to it and keep making it better and more fun. So that's it for the facility and the range and things that we've been doing out there. Moving into upcoming competitions, we've got next weekend the Vortex Extreme. August 10th and 11th, I believe.
It's a one-day course.
One-day match. 9 miles, 65 competitors, or 65 teams, I believe. And it's held in Douglas, Wyoming, so there's a little bit of elevation up there, and it's a team match. Now, I've just actually read more into the rules. I got the email today, and my rifle, which I am super stoked to be shooting, it's a DCC Arms action. These guys are out of Southern California. They built this action in barrel combo for me. It's a Proof Research carbon fiber barrel chambered in 6 Creedmoor. It's 26 inches long, and I just paired it up with the new XLR Industries magnesium element chassis.
Oh, that thing is sweet.
Now, I put my tiny little Night Force on there, 4 to 16 power with a 42 millimeter objective, and got some ultralight modular evolution bipods. And this thing, okay, Ray's got some bipods she let me borrow. But this thing comes in under 10 pounds. So it allows me to fall into the hunter class, which I did not know there was a hunter class. But I'm just super excited to be shooting this thing and to run a rifle that is not traditional with all the other competitors that you see, you know. I'm definitely interested to see what your take is on the match versus my take after it's over. Like, how did you feel carrying around an 18-pound rifle?
And carrying around my 18-pound rifle. I got my stock back from Manners. What I did was I sent my carbon fiber stock back to get the length of pull shortened and to get a mini chassis installed, and I'm super excited about it because my rifle, actually I haven't weighed it recently, so I'm sure it weighs less now.
Well, that's good, because I was concerned that you might not have arms or shoulders after carrying 18 pounds through 9 miles of...
Yeah, no, I would not carry my regular other rifle for that match. Mm-mm.
Well, I know we're going to have a lot of fun. The scoring is 70% shooting, 30% time. I am not very confident that we will make a great time. I think we can make an average time. So our strategy is pretty similar to other matches that have been team events where there's some movement involved. Tyler carries everything. Ray takes herself from point to point.
Well, and my rifle.
And your rifle. So you get to a stage and there's 4 targets. 4 targets at every position. I don't know if we have to range them or if they give us the distances. We'll be prepared either way, but you get 2 shots at each target per person. First round hit is 3 points. Second round hit is 2 points. So I'm guessing you can get 20 points per person per stage. So, and then 9 miles. So round trip, 9 miles. I got to look at the map and it doesn't follow the roads. It's, you're breaking some brush, you're on a hillside, you're going through rock gardens, and it should be an interesting time. I have not done the Vortex Extreme for 5 years now, 6 years, so, and that was at a completely different facility altogether.
I'm just going to tell you guys, I'm going to die.
I hope not, but I know CPR. So that's the Vortex Extreme. And then at the end of August, beginning of September, 7, 8, 9 or something like that, is the Competition Dynamics Sniper Adventure Challenge. And I've known that I'm doing this match for a while now. My partner is going to be Fred from Bison Tactical. And he asked me to be his partner, I think back in SHOT Show time frame, maybe before that. And when anybody asks you, like, hey, do you want to do something crazy and be my partner? Like, you don't want to say no, you know, and be that guy who's, like, wimping out. And I've done the Sniper Adventure Challenge a few years back to back to back. So I know what to expect. I knew that I was not in the condition that I needed to be in. So I had a plan, and I developed this plan. I will let you know if it works, but my whole goal was to power lift, go to the gym, get my strength up with power lifting, my core muscles strengthen, you know, just everything, more strength. And then 3 months before the match is where I would change my workouts to hiking, running, high repetition, low weight workouts, and changing my diet. I wanted to change my body mass. So I went from, currently I'm sitting right around 162 pounds, but I started up at the top right around 180. So 178, 180. So I'm doing pretty good. In the last 30 days, I would hope to get that weight down to 155, 153. And I just don't want to carry dead weight with weight when I'm out there. And it's going to make me feel lighter, more energy. So that's kind of my plan, and it's been working well so far. We've been doing hikes together, Ray and I. Been to Mount Charleston, doing a few things around Red Rock here in Las Vegas. So the plan seems to be working right now. I think, barring any injury, we should be pretty fine. And then the challenge itself, if you don't know what the Sniper Adventure Challenge is, it's a 30-hour test of your manhood. You will hike up to 60 miles if you don't quit. If you do quit, then obviously you didn't make 60 miles. But if you complete this thing, you will go 60 miles. And you are land navigating the entire time with a map and a compass. So you better school yourself up on land navigation. And if you didn't like it before, you better get to like it, because that's all you do. And there'll be challenges along the way. You'll hit a checkpoint, and it could just be a dog tag with a code on it. Or you hit a different checkpoint, and it'd be like, hey, we're going to handcuff you. Pick these locks. You have 15 minutes. Or swim out and find this thing. Or shoot this target. You know, so there's all these different challenges. They had climbing last year, so you had three different lanes. You had to climb this lane, then climb that line, and then go over here and climb this lane. And you were roped in. You were basically top roping, so, but it was fun, and you know, it's fun for everybody until right around 8 p.m. on the first night, and then you start to see the first few fall, and people quitting, right? And it's not like, I don't want to say like, oh, shame on you for quitting. Like, it's a difficult match. Like,
yeah,
it is not for the faint of heart. So you need to prepare for this thing.
You need to bring your own water filter.
Yeah, you got to be able to procure your own water, your own food. You're carrying everything you need to complete this task.
And your rifles.
For 30 hours. Yeah. And not only is there a physical preparation, but there's a mental one. Like, mentally, can you make it 30 hours without sleeping? You're going to get blisters. Can you make it through the pain of having this blister? I started reading a lot about foot care, taking care of blisters, blister prevention, socks, shoes. I mean, like, if I'm going to fall, it will be my feet that takes me out. So I wanted to be prepared for that. And, you know, again, the rifle. I'm trying to keep my entire pack and weight and gear, everything under 30 pounds. And I think I've accomplished that so far. It depends on what my partner asked me to carry for him when I get there. But, so that's the Sniper Adventure Challenge. Definitely looking forward to that. You guys will see an update on our social media once we complete it. And, that's it. And the last thing we want to talk about is Ray's 338 Lapua Magnum by HS Precision. Go ahead and give us the rundown of how it's set up now and what you're doing to it tomorrow.
So my rifle, when I got from HS, is around 8.1 pounds. And I threw my scope on there, and it, a total weight with bipods, it weighed 12.5 pounds. And that is a really, really light rifle for that big of a caliber. And it kicked my butt. It really did. It rocked my world.
It rocked my world.
I know, you had to quit after a while.
That's because you made me shoot like 50 in a row.
Only four more. Okay, I only loaded 22 rounds.
Well, it felt like 50.
And you shot like 7.
I shot really good groups, though. Let's not forget, is that thing was a hammer, okay? In both directions. It hammered the target. Like, that one group I had was 4 shots, and you could have covered this thing with probably a nickel because the bullets were so big. But it also hammered my shoulder because of the weight and lack of weight, right? Definitely a hunting rifle. But we're fixing that problem tomorrow.
Yeah, we are.
A big thank you to the guys at XLR Industries getting us a heavy element stock shipped out overnight so that we can put Ray's rifle into this thing and try and tame some of that beast down.
They felt really sad for me seeing my video. Yeah. Which I'm really excited because this is the first one that they made.
Yeah, this is a new style of their Element chassis for large calibers, and really looking forward to seeing how this thing goes. They told me on the phone that they're sending every thing they can for us to attach to it to make it weigh more. So that'll be really cool. We'll bolt this thing together tomorrow, and then we got to get out there. We've already zeroed and kind of gotten, you know, your load figured out, but we need some hard data. So we're going to go out to the range this weekend. Saturday, shoot your 338. We're going to change firing lines, move around the range, and get those long distance shots so that you know how this thing is shooting before Sunday. Tell us what Sunday is.
Sunday is my first ELR match, and it is in Bakersfield, California.
So Sunday, August 4th, I believe. It's a ELR match. I'm going to go. I'm not shooting. I'm just going to sit there like an old man underneath a shaded little pop-up chair with a spotting scope.
And some lemonade.
Lemonade. Maybe I'll do some spotting. But it's kind of just my break, you know, to sit back and chill and relax and let somebody else do the shooting for once. But I'm excited to see you shoot it and just to see what all goes into an ELR match because we... Never been.
Yeah, I've never been to one. I've seen a couple clips from the King of the 2 Mile.
Yeah. So we were thinking about this right here. And, you know, how much time do you get once it's your turn, Ray?
I don't know.
It's like 5 shots, right?
No, this one, I guess, it's 10 shots, 3 distances.
10 shots, 3 distances. So from what we've seen in the past, they'll give you a decent amount of time to sit there and determine what the wind's doing and how you want to take your shot. And, you know, then you shoot. And then you, like, reevaluate. And then you shoot.
Like, it's a minute later. It's so different than what we're used to.
So it's a little bit slower paced. And we're sitting there thinking, like, well, man, is everybody going to look at us weird if we, like, you know, Ray shoots, I spot, give her the correction. She shoots again. Spot, give her the correction if needed. Shoot, 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 shoot. And, you know, before you know it, 10 rounds have been shot in 2 minutes. in an ELR match.
It's a PRS match.
So I guess if we're getting hits, then we're doing something right. If we're not getting hits, then it's back to the drawing board. So we'll see how it goes. But either way, it's going to be a fun time. Anything you want to throw out there?
No.
All right. Well, we've had a pretty good time talking about the range and the fundamentals, the tripods, race 338, and just, you know, things that we haven't been able to get to. This podcast, we wanted to do it weekly, and it's just competitions and training and range building, you know, things have just continued to prevent us from getting out here and getting this thing done. So we're going to try and keep up with it on a weekly basis, all right? And the next one will come next week before we go to the Vortex, if we got anything extra to add in about that. But outside of that, we appreciate you guys listening and sticking with us. We hope to, you'll keep listening, hearing what we have to say, listening to Ray's crappy jokes.
they're kind of cheesy. I'm a cheesy person.
And we'll catch you guys next time. This is Tyler Ray. Later.